Welcome to the Agency Profit Podcast, a show dedicated to going deep space on agency operations, which is just as nerdy as it sounds. I'm your host, Marcel Petipoff. I'm the CEO of Parakeeto, a firm that helps digital and creative agencies measure and improve their profitability. Join me as I interview some of the smartest thought leaders and agency owners in our space and go deep into operations, metrics, and all the other things you need to get right so you can spend less time worrying about operations and more time executing on your vision. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Agency Profit Podcast. I am thrilled today to be joined by the first ever guest to join me on the show, a person that has supported me since before Parakeeto was even a real business, when it was still just an idea, and a person that has just released an incredible new book called Heal to Lead. Kelly is a trauma-informed leadership coach. And she speaks and writes about trauma, leadership, and consciousness, or as we're calling it now, the new TLC. And we're going to talk today about something that is off the beaten path for the show. It's not really directly about numbers and financials and all the things that we typically talk about today. It's a level deeper than that. And it's something that's very near and dear to my heart. And what I've learned is it's the reason that I don't do a lot of things that I know I should do in my business. So with all of that, Kelly Campbell, thank you so much for being here today.
Marcel, it's a pleasure. I'm so excited to connect with you in this way, my friend.
I am just so grateful to have you in my life, first and foremost. And as I kind of mentioned, you've been there since day zero to support me. And so I'm really grateful that we can be here today to talk about all the work that you've been doing. But before we get into all of that, I'd love for you to, in your own words, just share what it is that you do and who you serve.
Yeah. So it's been, you know, a really interesting path from becoming being the owner of an agency, a digital marketing agency for 14 years, and then going into consulting. And now as a trauma-informed leadership coach, this is the thing that brings me more joy and more fulfillment than anything I've ever touched in my life. And really, that's because I get to go deeper, as you said, with what are the underlying motivations and fears and things that are holding leaders back, right? It could be agency founders. It could be an executive director of a nonprofit, someone who works in government, CEO of a corporation, large corporation. So the work that I'm doing now, obviously, you know, is further out than just the agency space. But that's because I feel like what I'm holding now and the work that I'm doing now, it had to naturally kind of expand beyond those parameters. I'm working with emerging and established leaders who have this sense underlyingly that, like, man, there's got to be more to life than this, right? Getting up every day, the hustle, the grind, maybe coming home and having relationships that are not as fulfilling with, you know, spouses or partners or children. Having a couple drinks every night, you know, it's like, and then getting up every morning and just doing the same thing. And while we have pretty much in our society deemed that as normal, and that's just what you do, there are a lot of people who are starting to wake up and say, you know what, it's not what I want to do. So those are some of the people that I work with.
It's incredibly timely that we're having this conversation because just a couple of months ago, I was sitting with a friend that met me back when I was just starting my entrepreneurial journey. And I was in the thick of like my big personal development awakening that I thankfully went through pretty early in my life. And so we knew each other when I was doing the work. And then of course I got busy with Parakeeto and I stopped doing a lot of the things that I think are the reason that I am where I am in my life today. And he challenged me and he said, hey, like, you're not doing the work anymore. And that's why you're feeling stuck in these areas of your life. And I said, you know what? You're right. And I'm probably not even aware of the ways in which all that trauma that I went through when I was a kid is probably still showing up in the way I lead, in the way I make decisions, in the way I react with my team. And it is really at the root of a lot of the challenges that I've been experiencing. And so this quarter, I made the commitment. I'm going to go back to doing the things that I was doing, like going to therapy and focusing on my mental health and those kinds of things. And so this is really timely for me. Just to be able to speak to like how important this actually is and already how much of an impact just the conscious decision of saying, I'm going to invest in myself in this way and take care of myself in this way has already started to have on how I feel every day, but also how I'm showing up. And so all that to say, I'm really excited about the book. I'm excited about this conversation. So to frame things out, let's talk about the reason for this book to exist. Why was it important for you to start writing about this and to get your message out to the world?
Yeah. Before I answer that, I just want to say, you know, you mentioned at some point you stopped doing the work, right? And I think that where we have to level set is that the work, quote unquote, is never done, right? It's a lifelong commitment to a way of being. It's like, you know, if you were to say, well, okay, I'm 32 years old and I don't want to learn anymore. Like, that's the equivalent of saying, okay, I'm done doing the work. Like, the work is never done. You're constantly learning. And if you think of yourself as a student of life, then you should also think of yourself as a student of healing. And so, you know, why this book? I mean, it's been a culmination of all of the work that I've done all the way up until literally today. It's a culmination of, you know, some of the past experiences that I started to correlate. Those were some of the reasons why I showed up as a leader the way that I did. And wanting other people to really look at those things for themselves. It's not my job to fix or solve or heal or none of those things, right? That's not for me to decide. That's not for me to convince or persuade. But it does feel important for me to empower other people, to let them know that they can do those things for themselves. And especially leaders of organizations, leaders of community groups, leaders, even if you're just a leader in your family, right? I think we've conflated this word leadership. I would love to redefine it as leadership is just a healing journey, right? Like, it's an opportunity for you to figure out what's actually going on and how you can take those things that you've learned about yourself and help others in whatever ways that looks like. I also think that there's been a lot of stigma with the word trauma, right? It's been coming up more as a buzzword. You know, there's trauma talk and all these things that are sort of poking fun at it. But at the end of the day, there is not one person among us who has not experienced some form of trauma, right? Some form of, you know, some part of our emotional history that was either a big T trauma, right? Something that was a little bit more catastrophic. Maybe you grew up in a war-torn nation. Maybe your parents got divorced. Maybe there was abuse of some type, right? There, we all know what those big T traumas look like, but less of us understand that the small T traumas are the things that sort of erode our sense of self. And so that can really show up in a leadership role, right? So if you've ever, when you were younger, if you've ever had a situation where you felt humiliated or betrayed or abandoned or rejected, right? Like, raise your hand. Every single one of us has had an experience like that. And it might have seemed very benign at the time, but it's sort of, I'll talk about it this way. It's sort of created wiring inside of you that is now the way that you operate, right? Think about the way that a house is wired. If this switch and this wire leads to this, well, that's always going to be the way until you change it. Right? And you have the ability to change it. So, you know, I like to think about trauma and healing as trauma, the things that we've experienced, whether they were big or small or somewhere in between, they were not our fault. We did not consent to them. They definitely were not our fault. However, especially in a leadership role, it is our responsibility to integrate those things.
It's so interesting that you talk about this, because of course, now that I'm thinking about this a lot, and I'm purposely doing the work of trying to look at situations where, you know, perhaps I get into, I don't handle something as a leader well, and I'm having to reflect on that and ask myself, you know, where is that coming from? Why did I react that way? And what you've touched on with, you know, looking at your past and having that inform, you know, how you show up as a leader and how it's informing the decisions that you make every day and the way that you feel is so important. And it's so key, because I think anecdotally, my observation has been a lot of entrepreneurs have had a lot of big T trauma in their past. I don't know if there's research on this, so this isn't science, but that's been my personal observation. I don't know if that's been your observation as well, but I think there's something about that exposure at a young age to chaos or trauma or adverse situations that builds some of the muscles and some of the superpowers that actually make a lot of people capable of handling the level of uncertainty that entrepreneurs or leaders in large organizations have to take on in order to be successful. But often it comes with these Achilles heels that are much harder to spot and deal with. So for those that are listening, you know, how might they think about approaching this black box in a lot of ways of their leadership style and how their trauma is informing that, and how to parse apart the good, the bad, and the ugly within that?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, I can speak from personal experience that it wasn't until I sold my agency, and actually a few years after I sold my agency, that I started to correlate, why did I even want to become a leader? Why did I have this like entrepreneurial drive, right? Like, what was that about? I started getting really curious. And it really was this idea that like, I didn't inherently feel valuable because of the way that I grew up. Mm. And so I didn't know this, of course, this is all subconscious and unconscious, but it was like, okay, well, I can sort of prove to myself, prove to my mother, prove to the world that I matter, that I'm valuable, right? And so what did I do? I created an organization that was service-based, that had clients and employees that needed me, right? So I really mattered to them. I mattered to their mortgages. I mattered to their marketing execution. I was at the middle of all of this, right? And so we think about other professions that can follow the same kind of linear thinking that you're talking about here. Anyone who goes into emergency services, right? A high PTSD prone vocation. It's because they were really good at dealing with things like that when they were younger. Same thing with people who go into crisis PR, public relations management. They're so good at getting ahead of the narrative. Mm. Right. So those things that happened to them when they were younger, and I'm not going to say a blanket statement that this is true for every single person in these vocations, but a very high percentage of them. You know, people who, let's say, become farmers, especially in urban areas. And I have some of these examples in the book. You know, they want to not deal with food insecurity like they did when they were younger. So they grow their own food and they help other community members to grow their food and know where their food comes from. So it's like there's such a through line here. It doesn't take a lot to make these connections. So that's, I'll say all of that. You're really right on the hitting the nail on the head there. In terms of where to start, because it can be a black box. And that's why a lot of people, you know, when I first was certified as a trauma-informed leadership coach, I thought, oh, this is going to be interesting. Who in their right mind is going to be like, I want to work with you, right? Most people will not touch this stuff with a 10-foot pole. Now, that is changing. And, you know, mental health and therapy and things like that are becoming much less stigmatized. But there's still, you know, an air to that. That's true. So where to start is exactly what you talked about a little bit earlier. You know, if you've never spoken to someone before, a mental health professional, whether that be a therapist, a trauma-informed therapist, a trauma-informed coach, someone in that, you know, profession, a psychiatrist, et cetera, someone in that realm of mental health professions. If you've never spoken to someone before, that's a great place to start, right? But continuing to speak to your partner about it or your friends about it is not necessarily going to get you, you know, the help that you need. So you really, I think that's a great starting place. And then in the book, I actually have an addendum or sort of like a supplement to it that I talk about, I think around chapter 12, where, you know, there are a million different modalities out there, right? You can listen to any podcast and hear about cold plunge therapy and, you know, this new thing and ayahuasca and, you know, and I don't think it's our job as people who have gone through this, these modalities, tried these modalities. It's not our job to recommend them or refer those things to other people, because the healing journey for each person is going to look entirely different. So what might call to you might be something that I would never touch, and vice versa. So in this supplement to the book, I've got this website that was originally going to be part of the book, but then I overwrote it by 12,000 words. So I had to pull it out. And it was actually a blessing in disguise, because I got to create an online resource that can just be built upon and doesn't have to be really beholden to being in print. So that's at myhealingmenu.com, which again, part of the book.
Awesome. We'll make sure that that's in the show notes with, of course, links to the book, which if you haven't gone and bought one already, you can go ahead and do that now. We'll, Kelly and I will wait while you go ahead and buy the book. But the Healing Menu will also be in the show notes. So I want to take a step back, actually, because I'm guilty of this, of trying to rationally and tactically solve my way through these problems that I'm encountering in my life. Like a total man, just like, oh, if this, then that, like, oh, I'm tired, I will sleep more. Oh, I'm like, not happy.
Logic at its best.
Yeah. Like I'll just take more cold showers and I'll vitamin my way out of this lethargy that I'm feeling, or I'll just like read a leadership book and, you know, or look up some framework to like work through this conflict that I'm having with my employee that keeps coming up again over and over again. So obviously like how I'm having the conversation is not the problem, until something happens where I either get challenged or I get asked the right question, or in my own reflection, I come to the realization of like, hey, maybe there's something deeper going on here. And, you know, I'm a person that spent a lot of time in therapy when I was a kid. And so if it can happen to me, I know for sure it can happen to a lot of other people. So maybe the question we should be asking is, if you're listening to this, how do you know if you might need to take a step back and look several layers deeper at why you might be feeling a certain way or seeing the same kind of recurring issues come up or having the same challenges with your team or whatever that thing might be, that symptom that you feel that is indicative of a more fundamental problem?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those things, you know, that you mentioned, if there are, I've seen this with many coaching clients, right? There are, let's say, employees that don't feel like they can voice their opinions for fear of how you might react as a leader, or you hold a team meeting, whether it's with the entire organization, depending upon the size, or a small subset of the organization, you throw out a question, nobody feels safe to do that, or you throw out a question and then you immediately put your solution in the middle of the table and then ask for response, right? That doesn't make people feel safe. You might experience or see this as, there might be a symptom in the organization of employee attrition, right? Even client attrition, if it's at a high enough rate, could be an indicator of your own issues as the leader, right? Because there's a trickle-down effect here. You as the leader, if you're not leading in a way that's making everyone feel comfortable, and you know, you're not showing vulnerability, and you're not really getting the engagement, which is leading to a lack of innovation or creativity or things like that, then that's ultimately going to be felt by the clients. The clients are not going to feel seen, heard, valued, et cetera. They're going to leave or not refer any longer. There's going to be a bottom line impact to all of this, right? So we talked about before we hit the record button, people might say, oh, well, why are we talking about trauma healing and leadership? It's such a weird combination, right? This is a business podcast. This is specifically a profitability podcast. Well, profitability is a lagging indicator. And if we're talking about a trickle down, do you want to wait until you are at the point where the profit margin is suffering and you're, you know, scrambling to get new business, trying to figure out, hey, what happened here, right? It definitely starts from the top. And there are so many of these, and you know, I'm sure you and I could both come up with easily a dozen more of these sort of symptoms or signs that there could be something more going on here from the founder or the leader's perspective.
Do you want some free resources to help you measure and improve your profitability? If you do, then I want to tell you about our agency profitability toolkit, which you can grab absolutely free in the show notes or by heading to parakeeto.com/toolkit. It's packed with training videos, cheat sheets, templates, and all kinds of other great resources to help you start measuring and improving the essential metrics that are going to drive better profitability in your business. And it's helped thousands of other agencies around the world do the same. So I want to encourage you to go and grab a copy of that. And if you'd rather get in the fast lane and just have our team of experts guide you through the process of measuring and improving your profitability, then I want to encourage you to apply for a consultation at parakeeto.com. And with that, I want to thank you again for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the episode and I'll let you get back to it. Yep. And something that we talked about before the show, and I think it continues to compound how relevant this is a lot of the time people already know what they should be doing or what they shouldn't be doing. And when you strip away all the guesses and they're just left with, okay, this is what I have to do, it often becomes clear in that moment that this is actually what's holding them back, is a fear and insecurity, a past experience that has informed how they're feeling about this experience. And you know that that's the case. I mean, you described something earlier, right? Which was like these small T traumas of like a moment when you were a kid, when you got really embarrassed or, you know, you got humiliated or something happened to you. And it's like, I know that one of those moments is affecting me when I remember it randomly and I have a physical reaction to it. I feel nauseous. I feel anxious. I like physically snap out of it. And it's like, that is probably the same feeling that I'm feeling in my business when there's something that I want to avoid. That is probably the thing that I need to be running face first into. But without the tools to recognize that and the support to work through it, it can be really challenging. So where does someone start if, you know, through this conversation or prior to it, they've come to the realization that like, yeah, I've got some stuff from my past that's showing up in the way that I lead and it's holding me back. How do we start dealing with that?
What you're talking about requires a pretty decent amount of self-awareness and, you know, body sensory awareness, because these are visceral experiences. Mm. I think it's really important to make sure that we talk about the fact that trauma lives in the body, right? So these experiences that you mentioned, maybe I was embarrassed or humiliated when I was a kid, and all of a sudden something kind of similar shows up in a business meeting or some kind of, you know, interaction with your organization. And all of a sudden you feel nausea, or you feel there's just like some kind of sense in your body that's like, oh, this doesn't feel good. Or I remember this, right? That's really what's happening. It's like a remembering, but it's your body remembering, not really your memory. Mm-hmm. So you talked about, you know, a memory dropping in that maybe you hadn't thought about until that, you know, since that experience happened when you were 7 or 8 or 9, but your body knows, right? Some people say the issues are in the tissues. Like your body knows that those things are still floating around and they're still very much running the show. I kind of joked around with someone on another podcast saying there were moments that now looking back at it, there was a 9-year-old kid running my agency many days, and that's not healthy. Nobody wants that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you're speaking to, I think, like that emotional side of the brain taking over, which is like not rational. And I think that's why it can lead to so much conflict and so much chaos and so many irrational decisions. And, you know, it's so much easier to see when you're dealing with someone else that has clearly become overridden by emotions and they're not thinking straight, but it's way harder to realize when it's happening to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if people are interested in this, other than my book, there are a ton of books out there. You know, again, we talked about going to therapy. I think that's a great start. It's not going to be the thing that's going to help you integrate your trauma long term, but it's a great start. And I will always advocate for that. But there are tons of books. You could, you know, anything by Dr. Gabor Mate, especially his new one, The Myth of Normal. The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, probably one of the best books written on this. Even the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership by Diana Chapman and Jim Dethmer. That's a great book that talks, basically it breaks it down as to when you say irrational, they talk about that as being below the line or above the line, right? And the line is essentially like, what is your capacity? What is your self-awareness level? What is your, you know, level and comfort with vulnerability? What is your emotional intelligence in these situations? How good are you at essentially regulating your nervous system? All of this stuff, you know, no one uses the word trauma except for, you know, the doctors that I mentioned, but most people talk about this from a leadership perspective as to like lack of self-awareness or maybe a lack of regulation of emotions. And I think sometimes it's difficult in the moment to figure out like, why am I reacting in this particular way, right? I remember as an example, you know, if I would get an email from a client that had some flavor, even minute, some flavor of they were disappointed and that we had not done or I had not done what I said I was going to do, It was like a direct attack on my character. And the wheels and the gears in my brain did not interpret it like a regulated adult. It was like, oh, I'm the 9-year-old and you're telling me I did a bad thing and I'm a bad person and I'm being accused of something that maybe I didn't do. And so now I'm acting like a 9-year-old, right? And I really, you know, over the course of time, I think that we figure out, well, no, you can't always send the email that you want to send. You have to send the email after you come, you know, back above the line or back into regulation. Probably a better way to say that. But ultimately, you know, a lot of this is about that ultimate like quest for safety, right? That's what it is. We all just want to feel safe. We are afraid of a million things. That's how we're wired as humans. That amygdala in the back of our heads, that primitive brain, it's scanning for threat every 5 milliseconds. Think about that. No wonder why we are kind of in the states that we're in.
Now, there's two things that I want to dig into before we wrap. And one of them has to do with this thing that you talk about in the book, the idea of integrating your trauma. What does that mean? And what does it look like? What's your perspective on, you know, this process of integrating your trauma?
So again, this is the work. When we've been talking about the work is integrating your trauma. As I said before, it's not the things that we experienced, those events or long-term things were not our fault, but it's our responsibility to integrate them, which means process them, unpack them with a professional, and do work to heal them, right? Ultimately, what we want to do is get to a place where we understand more about ourselves. We have a more realistic understanding and picture of what happened to us realistically, like from the resourced adult's viewpoint versus the traumatized kid's viewpoint, right? Because that's really what was happening there. Any trauma that lives in our body is basically just there because our nervous system was unable to cope with that stress or that overwhelm or that experience, right? So it's our job to sort of like, I might even say, reparent that younger version of us that went through and thought that this was such a huge, you know, life-changing situation, because at that time it was. But if we keep running the show based on that faulty wiring, how are we going to get anywhere, right? And how are we going to lead others? So the integration component is about processing, unpacking it, and engaging in different modalities that call to you that can help. Again, I'm not here to prescribe or refer or recommend any of these particular modalities because it's going to look very different for everyone. You know, when I did the healing menu or myhealingmenu.com, after all of the entries, and I sort of separated out as to like almost like a restaurant menu, right? So the appetizers and the shared plates and the entrees and the desserts. And when I went through the entire list of everything that's on there or that was from the beginning, there were about 30 different modalities that I had personally engaged in, you know, up till now. I'm assuming and probably will add 50 more before I die, right? It's just what is going to work for me and what do I need in this moment? You said you were in therapy since you were little. I started therapy when I was 16, sixteen to about, I don't know, 36, something around there. So about 20 full years of therapy. Doesn't mean that was the only thing I was doing, but that doesn't work for me any longer. Cerebrally reprocessing and talking about what happened doesn't work for me anymore. It doesn't mean that that's not going to be the case for other people. But for me, I need more somatic experiences, more things that are moving that trauma out of my body. So we joked around about cold plunges before, but cold plunges are one way. Somatic emotional release, things that can actually get you moving. I love boxing, right? Mm-hmm. So like hitting the heavy bag, someone who had a lot of repressed anger, and I wouldn't touch a heavy bag or put on a pair of boxing gloves because that would make me sort of just like my mother. I would never do it. But until I started doing it, I had all of that pent up anger and rage inside of me. And with it not having a place to go, could you imagine the sort of havoc that was wreaking inside of my body? So getting that out now, going for a run, dancing. I mean, there's a million different modalities out there. Yeah, I mean, we could have a whole show just talking about all of the modalities that are out there, and we still wouldn't cover all of them. But the whole point here is that it's a very long lifetime of all of the different things that are going to feel curious to you and are going to help you sort of unpack these things, integrate them into this idea that maybe I can't get rid of it, meaning maybe I can't prevent it from having ever happened, right? Because it happened, right? Whether it was one time or ongoing, things happened to us. We accept that, we work through it, and we process it, we learn from it. This is where we come to the point of post-traumatic growth, right? Where we start to realize that there's so much here for us to learn and integrate and bring with us into the future. We can show up very differently for ourselves, for other people, and even for the environment, right? Because the more that we do this work, then we start to realize, hey, I also want to be a steward of the people that I lead, of the environment that I live in, right? And so the whole world just becomes very, very different. We're no longer living in our pain. We're not projecting that onto other people. We're showing up as someone who is very reliable, very resourced, and someone who can help others.
You touched on something that has been a personal belief of mine. It's not something I want to project onto others, but you know, you mentioned the learning that can exist within these things that have happened to us in our past. And I really do believe that for myself, at least, any trauma that I've experienced, the only difference between it having a negative impact on my life and a positive impact on my life is the degree to which I've been able to work through it and find those lessons and find those things. Because at the end of the day, they're hard things, and hard things build skills and build resiliency to some extent. And so it's like, can you find that and deal with the things that are holding you back? And of course, it's been a lifelong journey for myself as well. And as I go through that, one of the things that I've found for myself has been a really interesting realization is there is a moment in that journey where, for me at least, I had to come to this realization that there are a whole bunch of things that I've done, most of which I am not proud of, because of this thing. And in order to get on the other side of the healing, I have to accept that that's the truth, acknowledge that that's the truth, and then forgive myself for it so that I can then move past this thing. Because until that belief tips over, the rest of the dominoes can't fall. Because I have to essentially deny that it's been having an impact, or that it was a trauma, or I have to try and compartmentalize it in a certain way to protect myself from the guilt and shame and all the other things that I might feel, because, you know, I showed up in this way because of this thing. And that has been time and time again, this really interesting hurdle that is hiding sometimes in plain sight. But every time I come up on it, it's like, that is the TSN turning point for me. So I wanted to articulate that, if nothing else, just to hear your thoughts on it.
I mean, that's what integration is. It's exactly what integration is. You just said it much more succinctly than I did. but yeah, it's getting, I wouldn't say getting on the other side of healing. The way that I would say it is getting on the other side of the shame, the blame, the guilt, the right. self-doubt, the self-loathing. All of those things are, when we say like the 9-year-old or the 7-year-old is running the show, that's kind of what we mean. That irrational, that immature, that, and we can have compassion for that, because as the adult, what comes online for us is that shame, is that guilt, is that, man, I shouldn't have done that, or man, that means that I was a bad person because I did X, Y, Z, right? But having compassion for yourself and forgiving yourself to say, I still need to be held responsible and take accountability for the things that I've done because of my past trauma, and taking responsibility for my healing so that I don't cause and inflict more harm. Like, yes to all of that. And can you have compassion for that wounded part of you that did those things that, you know, were harmful? And that's a journey.
And that is so it, right? It's like that moment where you take back your power. At least that's what it's been for me, where, you know, if you see yourself as a victim, then you're shielded a little bit from the accountability for the things, but you also now no longer have the power to take ownership of doing something about it.
That's right.
And that's the shift that has been, you know, challenging at times for me to go through, of like saying, you know what, I'm no longer going to see myself as a victim of this trauma. I'm going to see myself as a person that, you know, can take ownership and accountability of it. But that is when the healing can start, or at least that's when it's been for myself.
I think that's really true. And I would say that even up to then, it was all part of the healing. Mm. It was all part of the healing, because the journey isn't just the positive part of it, right? The journey is like encountering that messy, dark stuff as well, even while you're going through it. But that lens of victimization that you're talking about, that's where we need to go from that place to this lens of an embodiment of feeling really empowered, that like, yes, I get to take responsibility for these things. I get to hold myself accountable. I get to engage in, you know, actively healing for the rest of my life. And people who think that, you know, a lot of folks who engage with this, they are in therapy, they go on retreats, they do these different modalities, they think they're like obsessed with it. It's like, you know, it's not an obsession. It is engaging in life, right? Because what becomes more available to us is more joy, more freedom, more expression of the full spectrum of human emotion. And that's what we're here for, right? Again, we're not here to run our companies, get in the morning, hustle, grind, forget to eat lunch, have terrible relationships with the people in our life, go to bed, maybe at some point retire, live in Florida and die. Like, that's not the point of life, right? And so, you know, it's like, no, engaging with life in this really full way gives us access to a vibrance that is not available to us if that trauma is dulling our senses every single day.
Yeah. It's interesting, as a very type A person, I have to rationalize spending time and energy and money on things like this, but I've recently re-rationalized it all for myself. And it's exactly what you're saying. For me, it was like, I will never miss the gym. Like, I treat, you know, my investments in my body, I've never questioned that they were going to make me happier and more productive and give me a better quality of life. And then when I think about, like, my brain literally experiences and processes and filters and applies a layer to everything that I experience in my life, it's like, how is that not at the same level as how I think about my body? So, like, of course, this is a muscle that I need to be constantly spending time and energy focusing on, because yes, it will improve my performance, but it's inside of work, it's outside of work, it's my level of happiness. It's like literally even just how much I can enjoying life is gated by my ability to consciously like get to that place. And it's something that I struggle with, because I'm like, I should be working, or this isn't productive, or, and like, that is, there's nothing else. There's nothing else that's more important than that. And so that has really helped me in this weird kind of type A way reframe all of that time and energy as being hyper productive, because it's like, there's nothing I can invest in that's more important than my mind and my emotions, yeah, and how I process everything that goes on in the world around me. And so, yeah, I'm so glad that you are publishing this book. Let's talk about the book. It's coming out as we record, but by the time people are listening to this, it will be out. So where do they go to get it other than the show notes, which is right there? Go get it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I'm hoping it'll be picked up by a ton of independent bookstores, because that's, you know, that would be near and dear to my heart to support those organizations. But yeah, so it's out as of the date of the release of this conversation, which I'm loving. And I'm just really excited for it because, you know, again, I don't think that there's been enough conversation that has bridged this idea of, you know, trauma's impact on leadership style, and then like what to do about it, where to go from here. I think a lot of people just avoid themselves to their detriment. And there are a lot of people right now waking up to the fact that they have the ability to change that. They have choice. They have agency here. So that makes me really excited and really hopeful.
Well, I am excited and hopeful as well. I can't wait to read the book. And I'm just so grateful, Kelly, that you came back for another interview after, I don't know what episode number is this, 130 something, 140. You are episode 140 and you are episode number one. So a pretty full circle moment. And I'm just so excited to see this get onto the world. So thank you for making the time today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Marcel. I love this. I love talking with you. I'm super here for your journey as long as I can be.
I appreciate it. You've always been a supporter and it really means a lot. And for those of you that are listening, go grab the book. We'll leave links to the book, to the healing menu, and to all of Kelly's social and websites so you can go get more of her in your life. And thank you for tuning in. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you've ever found yourself thinking, man, I get so much value from this podcast, I wish there was something I could do to return the favor. Well, today's your lucky day because you can leave us a review wherever you're listening to this, and it is incredibly helpful. Of course, if you haven't grabbed a free copy of the Agency Profit Toolkit, go and get that. It's got tons of free resources to help you improve your profitability. If you're looking to get in the fast lane and get help from experts to improve your profitability and measure your most important metrics, then apply for a consultation at parakeeto.com. We'd love to chat with you and figure out how we can help. With all of that, thank you so much for being a listener, and we will see you on the next episode. in.